Accession number 17623, Henry Watson, Reel 4.
Mr. Watson, Reel 4. You joined the 9th Battalion, the Durham Light Infantry. Whereabouts were they? Were they on the coast in defensive situations?
They were in Tiverton, in Devon.
And that was inland?
Yes.
And your task there, what was that?
Same as all the way through, just look after the vehicles, see that they were well maintained. Anything gone wrong with it, get it put right.
What transport does a battalion have?
Well, I don't know the numbers now, but I think we're somewhere about 90 vehicles with the motorcycles, the pickups, the officers' cars, the staff cars, the trucks, brain carriers. There was all sorts there, but the thing is that I was a unit fitter and I was supposed to repair anything that took up to about 2 hours to repair. If I couldn't repair it in that time, it had to go to the LAD, Light Aid Detachment, who were down in, that were in close by, probably not in the same village, and their job was to repair them if it took up to, I think it was 8 hours. And anything over 8 hours, it went back to field workshops. Well, I never had cause to send them there.
Sounded almost like a kind of a first aid job, as against a hospital, you know.
Yeah. Yes.
Yours was the first aid end of it.
I was the first one that it come to. The only one I can ever remember going to workshops was in the desert later on, when I got a brain carrier, got the side blown out of it. It had to go to workshops.
And you were the MT sergeant in the battalion.
Yeah.
How was your little unit made up?
Well, there was only three of us. There was two private ordnance corps and myself. And then we had one or two unit fitters. That's DLI fitters. So, I would say there are probably about five of us altogether.
And was there an officer in command? There was an MTO?
Yes.
A battalion MTO?
Yes, a battalion MTO, yes.
Who was that?
Captain Sparks.
What was he like?
Better give that a miss. He got killed, actually, after the war.
What was the problem? Was it strict disciplinarian or a chap who didn't know his job?
No, he didn't. As far as I was concerned, he didn't know his job. He and I used to have some rare dust ups. In fact, it's a wonder I didn't get shoved inside. I'll listen to anyone that can tell me anything. I'll discuss anything with anyone. But I'll not be told when I know that it's not true. I won't put up with that. So, of course, he used to rub me raw regular. And I used to bite back. In fact, I think it was through that I didn't get promoted when I should have been.
Do you recall the names of any of the chaps in your little MT squad, MT unit?
Yes, Eddie Marsh was an ordnance private. Tommy Hutton was another one. The unit fitter, so was a lad called Bowman. in Wainwright. There's five of them there.
What were they like?
Good lads. Got on all right with them.
Have they all vehicle experience prior to the war?
No. At one fella, he was a grocer to trade. So they gave him a 3 weeks course, passed him out as a fitter. That'd be all right, fitting bits of string round a pound of sugar.
So you must have had a training element within your own little group to bring these people up to...
Well, they just had to do what I did, pick it up as they went along. I only ever once had went on a... Well, it was hardly a course, it was just a little get-together, and there's a Ford rep came out, and the only thing he showed us it was of any use was how to set points on a V8, which was down in the front of the radiator. And it used to bother me as to how to get them set, but once he showed us it was easy.
Were you sufficiently well equipped to be able to do something like lift an engine out and deal with it? Or did you need to go that far?
I never had to go that far. I could have done, but it was part of my trade when I left home. But, the most I did on an engine that I can remember was taking the cylinder head off a couple of Bedfords that... putting a new valve in the cylinder heads, and I was slightly reprimanded by a major, an ordnance corps major who was going round the units from workshops, because I was taking on much more time-wise than I was entitled to, but I could do it, so I just be trained. It's what I'd been brought up to, so I might as well just carry on with it.
You did mention the kind of transport that a unit would have on the previous tape. Were there, obviously, each make, Bedford, Ford, wherever it was, it would have possibly peculiarities of its own.
Yes.
Do you recall any of those that you had to kind of be careful of or watch, or you knew that would bring problems?
Well, I used to have bother with, as I said, the Ford V8s, but I soon sorted that out when I had this. Do it stood us in good stead, because when I went to the ninth, the carrier section, their engines were all V8s, Fords and V8 engines, so that helped there.
The various drivers in the battalion, that is, were Durham Light Infantrymen, were they?
They were all Durham Light Infantrymen.
Their job basically was obviously to drive the vehicle, and then if a fault came along was to report it to you. Was that the way it went?
No, they had an MT sergeant, Joe Madison. He was the MT sergeant, and then there was some corporals that were responsible for the looking after the men, really.
So how were the responsibilities divided? You were an ordnance corps MT sergeant, sergeant, and a DLI MT sergeant in the battalion. What was the difference?
We just shared the work between us. But he was anything to do with the man. Joe was away. Joe Madison, he was away with the fellas doing whatever it was.
Your knowledge of mechanics and engines would be greater than his.
No, I wouldn't say that. He'd served his time at Adams and Gibbons at Newcastle, and I think we'll be fairly well on par. If there was any difference, Joe would probably have a bit more knowledge than I had, because he worked on the carriers, etc., before the war when he was at the Territorials, which I wasn't in.
Well, basically, you shared the responsibilities.
Yes.
Do you recall much about the battalion's officers when you went to them? who was commanding the battalion? Was it Percy? Was Percy?
That's the fellow. Colonel Percy was the CO. There was Captain Robinson, or Major Robinson. Major Slate, second in command. Captain Sale became staff captain, major, lieutenant colonel, colonel.
What was Percy like? Did you get on with him?
No.
Or did you see much of him?
I saw plenty of him.
What was he like?
Well, he was an old cavalry officer from the First World War. And he and I didn't quite see eye to eye. Because he used to shout "Whoa!" and his horse stopped, but I didn't say the truck was going to stop when he said "Whoa!" He and I fell out the first time. The staff car that he had was a Humber, and it had adjustable shock absorbers on it. And he came down one day, said he, well, he sent for me. He wanted this car to travel over the desert smoother than what it was travelling. And I tried to point out to him that I could set them so that it was a reasonable travel over the desert. The desert's not all flat sand. And it would be reasonable also on the hardcore road, where a coast road. But I said he couldn't have it both ways. He could only split the difference and get it, you know, so much each for each kind of terrain. And he went away in a bit of a bad fettle. And he sent for me, he said, Mr. Sparks, that's Captain Sparks, and Joe Madison was going to sort his car out. He says, I obviously didn't know my job. And he was quite nasty about it. So I told him, I said, well, if Captain Sparks and Mr. Madison, Sergeant Madison, knew more than the Humber people, I was willing to learn off them. But that was the way they'd made it, made them. So a couple of days later, sent his driver down for his car. I said, I'm sorry, you can't have it. Go back and tell him. So he went back and says, Sergeant Watson says you can't have your car, sir. Well, he came down full of hell. Where's Watson? Why can't I have my car? Well, I said, you sent it away to another fitter to have it put right. I says, well, instead of having rough springs now to ride, I says, you've got four broken springs in the world. I says, all the springs are broken. That was one time when that car had to go to workshops. So we didn't get on too well, I'm afraid. And I didn't know at the time. It wasn't until I was a prisoner of war I met my own Major Robinson of the LAD. He wanted to know where my crown was. I said, what crown? He says, your staff sergeant's crown. I said, I've never got a staff sergeant's crown. He says, you've been a staff sergeant for 6 months, just never put up an order. Percy had, he said, Colonel Percy had stopped me promotion 3 times. So whether it was just sheer spite or he didn't want to get rid of us, or what, I'll never know, because he snuffed it.
The other men that you, the other officers that you mentioned, Major Slade, what was he like? He's a name that crops up quite a lot.
He was a gentleman, and I liked him very much. He lived at Stocksfield. I didn't know when he was before the war, but found out later that's where he came from, because that's where my wife came from.
And was he well liked? Obviously, you said well liked within the battalion?
Yes, a very exact man. The only time I saw him really in action was at the bottom of the wadi out in the desert, when Colonel Percy was away, and they just stood and with his walking stick and directed a field of fire here, there, and pointing, though, just standing there with a walking stick and the cap on. That is a grand bloke.
Major Robinson, the other gentleman you mentioned?
I didn't know him personally. I knew of him, but never had anything to do with him.
This isn't the one, the Robinson, that got the nickname of Mad Robbo, is it?
No, there's another one, not Mad Robbo. Yes, I remember him, but the only time I had anything to do with him was when he wanted some pickups rigged up with all markings taken off them, and had to start, you know, first touching the button, it had to be there. And he was on with what he called himself a battle patrol. And there's a few of the lads used to go out in KD shorts, the shirt pullover, and the cap comforter, put that on the heads. No pay book, nothing to show who they were. And they used to go out and have a bit to do with the German and then come back. I was always glad to see them back, because I thought, oh, and if a war doesn't start, I'm in trouble.
And this is where his nickname came from, for these escapades in the desert.
Yes.
You were at Tiverton, as you say, for quite a while. When were you receiving word or thinking in terms of that you were going to go abroad? When did that time appear?
About March or April in 1941.
Were there indications that that was coming? Wasn't there a time when you got your KD and you had to try it on? Did you do that in that battalion?
Tried what?
The KD was issued for sizing. It happened with certain other battalions.
I didn't get that. What we got, I got a load of stuff to put on the Bren carriers, ice scrapers, for scraping the snow and ice off the, we were supposed to be going to Norway. But instead of that, we got sent out, we had no got the KD and got sent out to the Egypt.
You get an embarkation leave, did you?
Yes.
How did your family feel at the fact that you're coming home but you're going to go abroad?
Well, my mother had 4 brothers in the First World War, and a husband. So she was more or less used to that.
How did you feel about going abroad? Being abroad to France, of course, but now farther afield.
Well, I got invertigo on my face. And it was nasty. And actually, I know how I got it. There was a chap in the unit there who was using my towel, and he had it. And that's how I got it. So I went up to the MI room, and they picked all the scabs off, put some blue on, and then tied a really big bandage right around my head. Well, I felt a right nana. So I said to, well, it was Johnny Wainwright, actually. I said to Johnny to go to the chemist and get us some germaline. So Johnny went to the chemist and bought us a tin of germaline. And I put germaline on all these places. And after 2 or 3 days, the reason that I did that was I wanted to get it clear, because I knew the unit was going away. And they wouldn't take me if I was like that. I would be sent into a field hospital. So I hadn't been promoted that long. With every possibility I would drop back to the ranks. Didn't want that. And I got this chirmaline. I put it on. After 2 or 3 days, it cleared away. And Sergeant Jack was MI sergeant. He was looking one day in the mess. He says, I see your face is cleared up. I says, aye. He says, oh, I said, I thought we'd make a good job of it. Well, says, you didn't make a good job of it. I says, Jermaline put it right. So he went and told the MI officer, the doctor. So he sent for me, and I got a dressing down off him for putting this on my face. He says, it could have spread all over. What'd he do it for? And I told him why it is it. Oh, well, he says, we'll let it go at that. So I went to a lot of risk to get away with the lads.
Prior to going, do you remember being on the moors with manoeuvres in the winter down at Dartmoor?
Yes.
What are your memories of those times?
Well, I had a bad back, and I went sick just before the manoeuvres started. And I got no change off the MI officer there. He just, you'll be wanting light duties. I says, not necessarily. I says, I'm not walking, I'm not marching. I says, I've got a truck to ride in. So I just got chased out. But, it was a bit, to us, it was a waste of time, because for one reason. And the only reason was there was no one ever knew what we were doing or what it was all about. We had no knowledge at all. They didn't brief you and say, no, we're going to have a scheme and we've got A company over there, B company over there, and their idea is to take this from here or there. You had no idea what was on. You just all of a sudden you were up and off and away, zooming away somewhere to some other place into the wood and hide or something. Only there wasn't that many woods in Dartmoor.
But the weather was pretty severe whilst you were out there.
It was rough, yes. I know it was snowing. And the truck that I was in was a little 1500 weight with a canvas top, and that's all the cover there was. You couldn't even wind the windows up, there was none.
Were there any accidents or illnesses due to those adverse weather conditions?
Not that I remember.
Do you remember setting off from Devon and going up to the port of embarkation?
Yes. Yes.
Did the locals see you off?
From where? The locals at the station? Tiverton? No. I didn't know any locals. Didn't bother with them.
Had you to go early with transport, or did you move with the battalion?
No, went by train. The transport would go earlier than... We had to get rid of quite a bit of stuff before we set off.
What was that due to?
The civilian impress stuff. Had to get it runnable and then get rid of it.
You had enough of the army stuff now?
Yes.
New vehicles?
Yes.
Yes. Where did you go to sail?
Glasgow. Some of us went up the east coastline around the top, and some came through Hayden Bridge. I wasn't one of the ones through Hayden Bridge, but a lad who lived in that house just up there, he had a note written that he threw out the window because it came through Hayden Bridge.
And, of course, there you would go on board the ship. Do you recall the ship you were on?
Lord Una.
What are your memories of being on that vessel? It must have been, I mean, for a chap like yourself who never been, well, I've been to France, as I say, but this was a different kettle of fish, wasn't it? Were you excited by the prospect?
No, very, very boring. Very, very boring.
What were the conditions like on board the ship?
Well, I was one of the fortunate ones. The armourer sergeant kicked up a row. He said that he was more senior rank than some of the infantry boys, and we got a cabin. So we shared it with some of the, well, Billy Jack, Piper Hayes, those were two DLI sergeants, McLaren, and myself had a cabin. So we were all right with it in the cabin. There was nothing for me to do, so I just I used to go down with the armourer every morning and just mess about down in, way down in the hold amongst all the weapons that we had there, in more or less servicing rifles and things like that. So that's where I put my time in the armoury.
Did you? It would be a very long, boring voyage, as you quite rightly say.
It was.
Were there any attempts to alleviate the boredom by games or sports? Or?
Well, there would be, yes, but I was down the armoury. I'd rather be down there playing with a rifle than messing about.
And as you say, you were in a. As you were in the cabin, so relatively comfortable.
Yes.
The rest of the battalion, of course, were down on the decks.
And yeah.
As it got warmer, were you able to cope with the heat?
Oh, yes, yes.
Was it a big convoy you were in?
Yes, it was quite a big one. I don't know how big they got. But in that one, there was. We had. Destroyers. I had cruiser, I had aircraft carrier with us, and we had rough weather, and about 4 days out, one morning when we looked out, there was no one with us. It was just the ships on their own. All the escorts had gone. Well, I think it was the time when a German pocket battleship got weaving up the north, and they left us and went and chased him.
Did your vessel, the Orduna, have an accident on the trip?
Yes. There's signals by Hooter, starboard or port side, you know, which way to turn, just a zigzag. Well, once, when everybody zigged, we zagged. And it was one hell of a big bump. There was a big hole appeared in the side of the ship. Also, the damage of the... whether the damage was done before or after the collision, I don't know, but every morning when we woke up, the convoy was just a smudge on the far distant sea, and we were flat out doing about 7 knots trying to reach them. And then we put in at Freetown, and they just give them some matting to put over the hole, and we again, and then we put in at Durban, where they did a bit better repair, and then away again.
At Freetown, do you remember being in the port there? Did you get ashore?
Yes, yes.
How long was that for?
Oh, I think we just done a couple of days or something like that. They did a repair to the steerage on the ship, But it wasn't in dry dock, so it couldn't have been much.
Were you pestered by these little salespeople coming alongside you? And
Not really, though there was all many of us. Nearly all the Durham Light Infantry there.
On the ship itself, what was the food like?
Food, it was very good, yes.
Better than what you were getting ashore?
Well, I was never one to complain about food. I never complained.
Was there a canteen on the boat where you could get a drink and?
Well, I don't know. If there was, it wouldn't apply to me because I don't drink. I'm teetotal. I didn't smoke. The only vice I had, I liked chocolate.
When you got to Durban, what was the reception like there?
Oh, they were quite well received. There were a load of people on the dockside there wanting to take us home to have a meal with them,